The day before the state of the county address that comes up tomorrow, where a lot of elected and appointed officials from around St. Clair County will talk about the state of the county, obviously. And this is well attended. James Freed, the city manager of Port Huron, will be among those on the panel. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Paul.
This is kind of a good idea, isn't it, to get everybody kind of in the same room at the same time and sort of hash out what's going on in the county?
Yeah, and what's really nice, it's not like the State of the Union where you have a stale speech, someone up there with a prepared remark. I mean, Dan Damon will be there, so we'll get at least 40 minutes of that. But the event as a whole is going to be a very well-rounded discussion on collaboration. Mm-hmm. Carrie Hepting at the county and the Jeff Boehm and the Board of Commissioners have done an amazing job stabilizing that ship and really making county government the lead collaborator on a lot of projects in the county. And so I'm excited to hear what Carrie has to share and what Jeff has to share. And then we'll do a panel discussion with a lot of local leaders about, you know, how we can keep this going. And you know, we don't focus on we're not just a county, we're not just a city, we're a region. We are a regional collaborative partners here, and so that's important.
How do we keep it going? I mean, the economy's been good, obviously. We hope that it continues to be good, but, I mean, we can't just rely on, you know, the national or the state economy. We do need to keep things
Have amazing public partnerships, private enterprise, and also we have philanthropy. And we have groups like the Blue Meets Green Leadership Council, which is mostly private CEOs and nonprofits, philanthropy like the Community Foundation, who do needs assessments and gap assessments and look at what we need to focus on in the future to continue. This is an excellent question. How do we continue it? Mm-hmm. I believe that Blue Meets Green has identified their new priorities, and one of those are talent acquisition and retention. How do we get more talent to move here? How do we develop the talent we already have? And how do we get people to move back in the county? And those are going to see the priorities moving forward is population growth and talent growth. Talent is the new currency of the 21st century.
Well, it really is, absolutely, because you can't grow your economy without it.
Yeah, and you can build a factory anywhere. We all have the same incentives. So the deal you're going to get in Auburn Hills is the same deal you're going to get in Port Huron. The only difference is that the people in Port Huron, we have the people who can build it and make it and do it better.
Right, and that's what every community is trying to tout is their workforce. If you had to give a state of Port Huron address or statement or talk, what would you say the state of Port Huron is right now?
Roaring strong. The economy's booming. Home values are going up. We're seeing neighborhood reinvestments continuing to rise. So people are building permits to put a new roof on, to fix up their homes. From the city government, the budgets are tight. We are in the middle of refinancing our pension and OPEB bonds. That's not done yet. And so there's going to be a workout period where we, you know, continue through our physical fitness plan and see it through the end. And I intend to do that.
You got a chance to talk to the governor of Michigan about that on Friday when she was here in town.
I did. I briefly had a meet and greet with the governor. I was able to quickly give her a briefing on where we're at and what we need in the future. And so it was good to talk with her.
Did you give her your opinion on her budget?
I did a little bit. You know, listen, yeah. I appreciate bold initiatives and bold policy proposals. But a 45-cent gas tax, to be very clear to everyone listening, not one penny of that money will come to the city of Port Huron for local roads. So your neighborhood streets, our local streets, not one dime of that money will go to any of us. All that 45 cents will go to MDOT roads. So Pine Grove, Griswold, and Oak. That's it. Mm-hmm. No money anywhere else in the city.
13th Street.
So we have a current formula for road funding, which is called the Act 51 formula. They are not going to put the money in that formula. They're going to take the 45-cent gas tax and put it in the general fund. That will alleviate the general fund money so you can essentially invest more in other areas of the state you want to do. So you see exponential growth in city budgets across the state because the gas tax is going to subsidize it. So it's kind of like a shell game. You put money into the general fund, and then you can take money out and put it in all these other different departments. So I'm not a believer that we need a 45-cent gas tax.
Yeah, and I haven't heard a lot of support for that 45-cent
well,
gas tax.
Well, you know, the governor said a very compelling statement. She says Michiganders are tired of being told that they have a solution to a problem. Only when that solution gets implemented doesn't fix the problem. I wholeheartedly agree with that. That was some of the issues we faced in Port Huron. But telling people a 45-cent gas tax is going to fix the roads and knowing that that money will never go to the road in front of their home, it's not going to go to Gratiot. It's not going to go to Nurin Street. It's not going to go to 24th Street. It's going to go to state roads only.
Right. We'll see how that all shakes out. Meanwhile, Port Huron has a zoning issue that's been brewing in the Old Town neighborhood with the center of Port Huron. I want to just talk a little bit about that and what solution you might see. I realize it's up to the zoning board, the zoning commission, and the city council. But where do things stand with that right
now?
Yeah,
so we have the First Congregational Church, who, from what we've been told, is slowly shrinking and shrinking. The church probably won't be there in a couple months. But they began leasing space out to a group called the Center, which was a nonprofit, and they were doing some they do amazing stuff, amazing programs, and we support those programs, we support those initiatives. However, the growth of the center is now getting to a point where it's not a church activity, it's a commercial activity, and it's in the middle of a neighborhood. And having methadone clinics and needle exchange clinics in the middle of your neighborhood is not conducive. I wouldn't want that in my neighborhood. And so if the church no longer owns the property, they have to give it to a private entity, then it has to be rezoned because the church is under a separate zoning. And so the issue is they want to rezone it to CBD, but it's in the middle of a neighborhood. And so the neighborhood's voiced a lot of vocal opposition. To be quite frank, I'm in agreement with the neighborhood, but I don't sit on the planning commission. And so we'll see how it shakes out. The question is, we support the services. Let there be no question about that. We support these vital services. We think they're needed in our community. However, there's a right place for services to be delivered. And dictating that we're just going to go in any neighborhood we want, in the middle of the neighborhood next to your house and do whatever we want, that's not quite the attitude to take.
I know one of the reasons that the center is doing things that they are where they are is because they say that's where the population that needs those services is. And so
I think their census data would show otherwise. They're okay. Bringing people to that location. So I disagree with that. And I think that's a disingenuous statement. I think those services can provide it anywhere else in the city. We have plenty of commercial space available, more proper locations that are not in the middle of a neighborhood, that are within walking distance for the people who need those services. So there's solutions out there, but we're not going to put these types of services in the place where it's just cheap real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on that.
So it's in the hands of the Zoning Commission at this
point,
right?
It's in the hands of the Planning Commission right now.
The Planning Commission. Yeah. Okay. Do you have your NCAA bracket filled out?
I do. I picked it based on colors and flipping coins.
That's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah.
You may have the best bracket of all.
Well, then I did put MSU going... After watching MSU beat Michigan yeah. three times.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, one time you can say it's a fluke. The second time you can say it's the refs. The third time,
I know.
A lot of Michigan fans have to have a real moment of pause and say perhaps Michigan State is the better team.
Yeah, well, you know what I did? I picked Michigan and Michigan State in the Final Four with the hopes of Michigan finally beating them in the fourth game.
I'm one of the millions of Americans that couldn't name one basketball player. I couldn't name you one player in Michigan State, but... For just a few weeks out of every year,
absolutely,
we have conversations like this where like, sure. I pretend to have any idea and somehow have be credentialed to give sports advice.
There you go.
And I don't.
There you go.
But I join the millions of Americans who are just completely BSing their way through March Madness as if I know what I'm talking about. I'll go to Wings Etc. at night. I'll be eating wings, talking like I know what I'm talking
sure.
about. But most people will recognize James Fried has no idea about sports. And my wife would agree.
But you will at least look like you do for a week.
Yeah, I have a hoodie. I'm going to go up to Campus Den, grab a hoodie.
There you go.
And look the part. And,
perfect.
And, yeah. And then whoever's in the Final Four, I'll buy one of their hoodies too and be a fair weather fan.
There you go. James, always appreciate your time. Thanks for coming in. James Fried with us on WPHM 749.